Hello and welcome to the Formula Fun podcast. Today, in the second episode, of our Meet the Team series, I am going to introduce you to Red Bull. The Austrian team based in Milton Keynes, England, has performed admirably in their short time in the sport, to put it mildly. They may just be a fizzy drinks company, but they've shown that with the right attitude and the right personnel, sometimes even the little guys can take on the heavyweights of Formula One. It might surprise you, actually. We have to go all the way back to 1995. That's right. Red Bull entered the sport as a sponsor for Sauber, the Swiss team Sauber, who we now know as Alfa Romeo, still on the grid. From 1995 to 2004, Red Bull was the primary sponsor of the team. A semi-successful team, a team that saw a young Kimi Raikkonen drive for them. In 2005, Red Bull, under the guidance of its owner, Dietrich Mateschitz, bought Jaguar. Okay, so now we have to back up a little bit again. So they had been sponsoring Sauber, 95 to 2004. During that time, there was another team on the grid called Stewart Grand Prix. This was a team that had been started by Jackie Stewart, a legendary Scottish racer, three-time world champion. The team lasted only three total years, I guess, 97, 98, 99. Or 97, 98, depend on how you kind of count it, and then was sold to the Ford Motor Company. Okay, so 1997, Jackie Stewart starts a team. The team is not very successful. By 1999, the team is sold to the Ford Motor Company, who brand the team as Jaguar, or if you're in the UK, Jaguar. Or however you say that, I don't really know. So Jaguar becomes the Ford Motor Company's Formula One team and races from 1999 to 2004, at which point they're bought by Dietrich Mateschitz, the Red Bull owner. So Red Bull goes from being a sponsor of Sauber to an owner of what was Stewart Grand Prix. Stewart Grand Prix became Jaguar, became Red Bull. That means that in 2005, we have an energy drink company who is the primary owner and operator of a Formula One team. And at the time, and even still today, I should say, probably, this was a big deal. Many people involved in the sport thought that it was maybe somewhat ridiculous for a quote-unquote fizzy drinks company, which is what they called them, to run a Formula One team. You know, Formula One teams were car manufacturers like Ferrari and Alfa Romeo and Maserati, Lamborghini and Ford, you know, and Lotus and successful historical teams like that, and Mercedes, of course. You know, they weren't energy drinks companies, and so there was a little bit of a sense from the beginning of the inception of this team that it was going to be kind of a, I don't want to say a joke, but something that everyone would kind of look sideways at a little bit. There's everybody on the grid, and then there's kind of the energy drinks team, is the impression you get. In their first year, 2005, they ran the same engines that Jaguar ran in 2004. So they kind of just inherited the Jaguar team. They weren't extremely successful from the start, but they were much, much better immediately than Jaguar had ever been, and showed that they had this new company culture that allowed them to fight for points and podiums on occasion. And so it was clear, even from just 2005, that there was something different about the culture at Red Bull versus the culture at Jaguar, for example, that allowed them to be a little bit more competitive than everyone thought they were going to be. That year in 2005, they also make a decision which is germane to the current state of Formula One, in that they purchase a well-established team, but failing at the time, called Minardi, an Italian team. So they purchase Minardi and turn it into kind of their junior team. This becomes what we now know as AlphaTauri, and for years and years and years was known as Toro Rosso. Toro Rosso, Red Bull in Italian. So, 2005, big year for Red Bull. They score points, podium contenders, they immediately improve the company culture at Jaguar, and they purchase Minardi, which becomes their junior team, Toro Rosso. 2006, the next year, they sign a deal with Ferrari for engines, which seems like an ideal situation. Looking back on it now, it's interesting as a fan of the sport to say, wow, you have Adrian Newey, whom we'll talk about in a second, and Ferrari engines? This is like a dream scenario. So, 2006, Red Bull have Ferrari engines. Although they're not as dominant as you might expect a Ferrari engine to be, because we have new engine regulations in that year that level the playing field a little bit, so to speak, and Ferrari just aren't quite on top of them, long story short. This is also the first year, 2006, of the tenure of a man known as Adrian Newey. And if you're a fan of Formula One, you need to know who Adrian Newey is. He is the Red Bull aerodynamicist, chief designer, who, as I have just told you, has worked for Red Bull since 2006. I struggle to find the correct way to properly describe Adrian Newey in just a short, simple podcast episode. He is a master of aerodynamics. He has been responsible for designing the Red Bull cars since 2006, has designed cars that have won 4 back-to-back drivers and constructors championships, and is kind of known ubiquitously around the grid and among Formula One people as kind of just this Formula One design genius. And so Red Bull happened to hire him. He worked for McLaren before that, was responsible for their world championships. And we could do a whole episode, seriously, like it would be worth it to do an episode about Adrian Newey. Long story short is he goes to work for Red Bull in 2006. 2007, they decide they're going to move on from the Ferrari engines. The Ferrari engines go to the Toro Rosso cars, and instead of Ferrari engines, instead of running Ferrari engines in the Red Bulls, they run Renault engines from 2007 to 2015. 2007 and 2008 for Red Bull are kind of just they're not nothing years, but they're years that in a short history like this, you would just kind of glaze over and say they did okay, not terrible. But in 2009, something happens remarkable that is worth talking about, which is they introduce a new driver named Sebastian Vettel. Okay, so 2009, we see the emergence of Sebastian Vettel. He's driven for Toro Rosso a little bit already, and actually won a race in Monza, their home race. That's a different story. But Sebastian Vettel is promoted from the Toro Rosso team, their junior team, to the main team in 2009. This is the year that Red Bull achieves their first win. It is Sebastian Vettel. In 2010, they're even better. And Vettel goes on to win four. 2010, 2011, 12, and 13 World Drivers' Championships in a row. One of the most dominant eras in all of Formula One history for any team, whether it's a manufacturer, a garagista, like Williams or McLaren. This is one of the most dominant periods in all of Formula One history, where Red Bull takes double championships, drivers and constructors, 2010, 11, 12, and 13. 8 championships in 4 years. It's the best you can possibly do over that time span. In 2014, engine regulations change. This is when we get the V6 turbo hybrid era that we now currently are in. In 2014, Renault failed to provide a very competitive engine, which is part of a cascade of events that leads us to the modern Red Bull. But before we go down that path, I want to introduce you to a new driver at Red Bull in 2014. A young Australian bloke by the name of Daniel Ricciardo. Daniel drives for the Renault-powered Red Bull cars in 2014. And, quite surprisingly, to many observers at least, outperforms his 4-time world champion teammate, Sebastian Vettel. This is the year Sebastian decides to leave Red Bull for Ferrari, where we see him today until the end of the season, that is. So 2014, important year for Red Bull. New engine regulations, which mean the Renault engine are not nearly as competitive as they had been. All of a sudden, the engine that led them to 4 double championships is no longer reliable or powerful. They introduce a new young Australian driver by the name of Daniel Ricciardo, who promptly beats Sebastian Vettel, and Sebastian Vettel decides to leave for Ferrari. Now, the very next year, or over the course of the next 2 years, I should say, Renault and Red Bull begin having this epic, historic falling out. Although Renault had powered them to 4 double world championships, now the engines are unreliable and not powerful, and this team that is used to winning races and used to finishing on the podium and used to having pole position in races is suddenly way less competitive and very, very unsatisfied. Christian Horner, the team boss, is outspoken about his criticism of Renault. And likewise, Renault becomes outspoken in their criticism of Red Bull. And so it goes back and forth until 2016, when, although they retain Renault engines, Red Bull rebrands them as Tag Heuer engines, which is kind of interesting because Tag Heuer doesn't make engines, so it's really just this clear sort of signal to everybody in the Formula One world that we don't like Renault, Renault doesn't like us. Sure, it's a Renault engine, but we're going to brand it Tag Heuer so that we don't have the word Renault anywhere on our car. And we're as little associated with Renault as possible. So this public breakdown continues over the course of the next few seasons. Before we get to the modern engines and the modern era of Red Bull, there's another important historical event. And I dare call it a historical event, but I don't think that, in hindsight, is an exaggeration. That occurs in 2016. In 2016, Daniel Ricciardo gets a new teammate whose name is Max Verstappen to replace his Russian teammate Daniil Kvyat, who's still on the grid today, still racing for Toro Rosso. But if you're a fan of Formula One, you know who Max Verstappen is. This was his entry to the sport. Max was the youngest race winner, youngest pole sitter. All in all, it goes without saying how successful of a driver he's been in his short time. He's only 22. He's still only 22 years old or something like that. And he's already established himself as one of the maybe history's most successful and talented drivers. So he comes onto the scene 2016. And from 2016 to 19, I should say, Ricciardo and Verstappen represent what Christian Horner called their strongest driver lineup in history. And this was a time where we didn't see Red Bull winning championships, but we saw him winning races, sitting on pole position, fastest laps, finishing on podiums. Ricciardo and Verstappen were very equally matched during this time until Ricciardo decided to leave for Renault, but that's a different story. Now, bringing us into the modern era, Max stays at the team. Ricciardo leaves. If you followed for the last couple years, you know there's been some up and down between that other driver who's going to be Max's teammate. I was about to say, more importantly, this isn't more important, it's just extremely important, is that in 2019, Red Bull switched to Honda engines. This is a big, 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 big deal. Anytime a team decides to go for a new engine, they're taking a huge gamble. And in the case of Red Bull switching to Honda engines, they were taking an especially big gamble. You're taking a gamble when you switch to new engines because you're starting a new relationship with a new group of people, a new team of people. Let's say it's Mercedes. You go from having Renault engines to Mercedes engines. Now you have to redesign your car around that engine, which is not a super simple thing to do. Aerodynamically, physically, weight distribution, rake, gearbox, everything associated with putting a different engine in the back of the car. So you're taking a big gamble even switching to an engine like McLaren is doing next year to Mercedes engines. You would think that would be a lock, but it's still a huge gamble. Red Bull switched to Honda engines. Honda has been in the sport for a long, long time and been very, very successful. But in the V6 turbo hybrid era, Honda has proven to lag, far behind even Renault in the other engine manufacturer categories, Renault, Ferrari, Mercedes. Honda represents clearly the fourth best engine, or had represented clearly the fourth best engine. And so for Red Bull to switch from what basically was the third best engine to the fourth best engine at the time showed that A, they did not trust Renault anymore whatsoever and just had no interest in continuing that relationship, and B, trusted Honda enough that they had made enough strides in the power and reliability department to be worth putting not just in their Toro Rosso cars, which the Honda engines had been in for a few years at this point, 2018, 2017, but into their Red Bull cars. So last year and this year, the Red Bull has been powered by Honda power units, which represents a whole new era in the Red Bull history. How successful will it be is yet to be seen, of course, because we're sitting here talking only in the very beginning of the second year of the Red Bull-Honda relationship. Honda have improved their engine since last year, and we could go into tons of details about what that means for Red Bull and their predictions, but this is a history lesson, so we'll stick to what's already happened. Now, I hope that what you just heard gives you a good idea of who Red Bull are, where they came from. They've been in the sport for, golly, I don't even want to do that math, 25 years, 1995 until now. First as a sponsor, then they took over for Jaguar. They've switched engines several times, Cosworth, Ferrari, Renault, then now Honda. They've been incredibly successful in terms of winning four straight Drivers' World Championships and Constructors' World Championships back to back to back to back, 2010, 11, 12, 13. They've had some of the most successful drivers in the sport who are still currently on the grid: Daniel Ricciardo, Sebastian Vettel, Max Verstappen, all Red Bull drivers, all products of the Red Bull driver scheme, who are all still on the grid, all race winners, one of them a four-time world champion. So I hope you have some idea now of the history of Red Bull. And before we go, I'm just going to give you a few facts about the team today and tell you a little bit about their two drivers. So one thing that's important to know about Red Bull is their team boss. His name is Christian Horner. Just to know who he is, he's kind of an all-star in the sport, along with the Mercedes team boss Toto Wolff. Christian Horner is one of the most famous and publicized team bosses, especially because he's been the team boss of Red Bull for so long. I think he was team boss when he was like 32 or 31. He was already the team boss, the team chief, CEO, not CEO, but team boss of Red Bull, which is crazy. And he has been ever since, still is today. Their car has a name. I want to try to give you the name of all these cars too, just give you some raw facts. All cars in Formula One are named by the team. In the case of Red Bull, their car this year is called the RB16, meaning Red Bull 16th variation, basically. The RB1 was their first car. This is the RB16. Again, their power units this year are Honda. Okay, so Christian Horner, team boss. Their car is called the RB16. They're powered by Honda engines. They're based in Milton Keynes, England. Although they race under an Austrian license because their owner is Austrian. A little bit about their two drivers. First of all, You can't talk Red Bull unless you talk Max Verstappen. Max Verstappen, I'm sitting here looking at his birthday. He was born on September 30th, 97. So do that math with me. He's coming up on a birthday. But the man is like 22. Which is crazy, considering he has 31 podiums, nearly 1,000 points, 8 race wins, only one pole. Unfortunately for Max, he's only sat on pole position once, but 31 podiums, nearly 1,000 points, 948 points to begin the year, 8 wins, and a pole for a 22-year-old. He's 22. 23? He'll be 23 in September? Am I doing that math right? Y'all help me with that math. I hope I'm not terribly wrong about that. Max was born in Belgium. Races under a license from the Netherlands. Okay, so Dutch. Really popular. Phenomenally popular. This guy has the whole nation of the Netherlands behind him. And phenomenally talented. So Red Bull have that going for them, that they have Max Verstappen. If you're just learning about Max Verstappen, you should know. He's incredibly young and incredibly skilled and looks to be a future multi-time world champion if he just ends up in the right situation. Very few drivers in the history of Formula One have been as well situated to compete for championships as Max has in terms of just, as Max is, I should say, in terms of just raw talent and being on a good team with like Adrian Newey and Christian Horner and Honda all supporting him at this point and just purely just backing Max. This is Max's team. They are trying as hard as they can to make this young man, a world champion. So Max Verstappen, everybody, superstar. I think the way Christian Horner put it is he said, some people are sprinkled with the pixie dust, and Max just has the pixie dust. So you can take that for what it is. That's the way Christian Horner put it. His teammate, bless his heart, is Alex Albon. Alex Albon races under a Thai license because he's part Thai, or is Thai, but of British nationality. Thai ethnically, British nationally. He has 92 points compared to Max's 948. This is only his first and a half year in Red Bull. And like his predecessor, Pierre Gasly, Albon has shown so far to just not be able to really compete with Max. He's very, very, very talented. He's finished fourth in a race before. You know, out of 22 races, he's already scored nearly 100 points. You know, he's not... Everyone who rates Alex rates him very highly. But the problem or challenge that any teammate of Max Verstappen has, is that now you have to go and you have to stay with and compete against one of history's greatest and most talented drivers in the same equipment. So Max has a car, you have a car. How does Max want it? How does Max want it set up? Okay, cool, that's the car you get. Now go race them against each other. Turns out Max is half a second, 6/10, 7/10 faster than you per lap. Added up over 70 laps. And you have a huge discrepancy between where these two racers finish on track. So it's tough to be Max's teammate. Anyone, Alex, Pierre, Daniel Kvyat, whoever it were, would have a really hard time measuring up to Max and driving in his shadow, so to speak, because they have to measure up to him. So with that said, before I just go on and on and on about Max Verstappen, I'd like to remind you that you can support us or communicate with us by liking the podcast, leaving a review of the podcast, subscribing to the podcast. I'm like sitting here struggling to think of all the things you do. I'm like, what else? Send me an email. Send us an email at apowerunit@gmail.com. apowerunit@gmail.com. Or find us at Formula Fun Pod on Twitter or Instagram. If you're into those kind of things, you know, check it out. I'm trying to build a community here. The more we communicate with each other, the better the podcast is going to be. So, with that being said, I'm going to sign out. I hope you enjoyed it. Talk to you later.